Greetings, everyone. Thanks for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are at our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle call. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you all for joining us. Yes, this is July 15th, wow, 2021. I hope you're all doing well. I know that many of us feel that these are very tumultuous and somewhat challenging times. And I just want to honor all of you for the efforts that you're making, because I remember when I was a kid, my father loved talking about the American Revolution. I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts. And so the Revolutionary War was this big thing, and he would get dressed up in his Minuteman outfit every April 19th, and we would reenact the battle and talk about, he would always talk about how important it is to have integrity in politics and not to have tyranny and all these things. And he talked a lot about the founding fathers and how they, he loved this idea. He used to talk about it quite a bit. These are the times that try men's souls. And I have to say, he passed away quite a few years ago, but those words echo in my mind quite often. I'm not sure exactly who said them. I think it was Thomas Paine. But I really feel it's a time that tries us in many ways. And so I'd like to talk about how we can be effective advocates during these times and some of the issues that are facing us. And we don't have a special guest this month. I did that on purpose because I think it's a good idea now and then to just have just the World Peace Diet Circle people, the World Peace Diet facilitators, and to just have a chance to share ideas, ask questions, share your trials and tribulations and triumphs and questions you may have. So I would like to go ahead and get our meeting started. And it's a beautiful day here in Northern California. It's cooled down a little bit. It's gorgeous. Nice to have some weather that's not very hot and dry. It's been so dry here. We're hoping for some rain, of course, although other places are having flooding. And I'd like to begin our time with our meditation. So that's an opportunity for us to connect with each other and connect with the spirit that unites all of us. So I'd like to invite you, as you are joining us here now, some people are still just coming in, to get comfortable wherever you happen to be. And if it works for you, to turn your attention within, close your eyes. I do have the piano set up here again today, I'm happy to say. So I will be accompanying the speaker, and hopefully I have the levels better than last month. I think it was, or last time, it was a little bit off, but okay, let's go ahead and begin. Just relaxing into this present moment. Becoming aware of our breathing. So as we open our minds now to the truth of being, we allow ourselves to relax, letting go of any thoughts of the future, letting go of any thoughts of the past or what it took to get to our call today, and entering the heart of gratitude. Heart of appreciation for this beautiful moment that we have now. Giving thanks for everyone in our life. And all of the teachings. That we have received in this life. Some of the lessons may have been somewhat painful at the time. We let go now of any feelings of regret. Open to the heart of appreciation. Of forgiveness, knowing that the being we are right now is the perfect unfoldment of the truth that we are. And so every event in our past is absolutely essential in creating the beautiful being that we are. So letting go. Breathing together. Breathing in the spirit of compassion, breathing in the spirit of loving kindness. Breathing in the spirit of truth. Breathing in the spirit of abundant living. So we open our hearts now to each other and to everyone who is part of our movement to help liberate animals from human domination and oppression. Everyone who is working creatively to liberate all animals. Both non-human animals as well as we human animals, human beings. May all living beings be free. And just feeling in our heart now the reality of this yearning. That all beings be free from domination at the hands of humans. That all beings be at peace and free of the causes of suffering. Hearts to fill with compassion, with understanding, and And connecting now especially with a feeling of joy, with the appreciation that we have for the beauty around us and within us, the beauty in our friendships and in our relationships, in the memories we have, the beauty of nature, the beauty of animals, of rivers, of oceans, birds and flowers, of the children, of all living beings as they explore their world, embarking on the adventure of an incarnation on this beautiful and abundant earth. Opening our hearts to the beauty of life and to the joy of being. The joy of doing our best to be a force for healing, for understanding, for contributing and creating relations that are filled with possibilities of truth and harmony. Unfolding for the benefit of all living beings. We give thanks especially for the unseen dimension of life. Beckoning us always onward. To experience directly new frontiers of awareness and understanding, new perspectives that bring healing and wisdom, new dimensions understanding that can uplift and inspire ourselves and others. And the willingness that we have to let go of any errors in our thinking, join together and breathe together with every exhalation, radiating love into our world, excluding no one. Abiding in love and kindness. Seeing the light of loving kindness radiating from our heart into the infinite web of relations, building community, building sanity and joy, and connectedness. Together, breathing compassion, into the infinite web of relations. May all beings held in compassion. And we know that compassion encircles this beautiful earth for all living beings everywhere. Together breathing joy into the world, the truth of the ever surging fountain of joy at the very heart and core of our consciousness, the joy of being. Together, breathing and radiating peace, harmony and serenity, may all beings be established in inner peace, born of the unity of all life. And we see this beautiful earth now held in the light of infinite and eternal peace. And so as we begin to come to an end of our time of meditation, we return to the heart of gratitude and appreciation for this moment. Whatever winds are swirling, whatever currents are pulling, with every breath, we give thanks, knowing that every cell in our physical body is being filled with the light of infinite life, that every dimension of our affairs is being filled with the light of learning and contributing and growing and progressing toward a higher understanding of our purpose on this earth. Giving thanks, knowing that every event in our life is ultimately for the highest unfoldment of consciousness and the awakening of all living beings. That we are one with the source of all life. That what we are is eternal, was never born, will never die. We give thanks, knowing that every day we are connecting more authentically with our inner intuitive wisdom, and that is guiding us to fulfill the unique adventure of this lifetime of learning and growing, and that we are contributing our unique contribution to the great human effort to liberate all living beings, to liberate ourselves from the delusion of the society into which we were born. We give thanks, knowing that every day we are growing in wisdom and compassion. and that together we are building a world that cares for everyone, for all beings, in the light of truth. Much love to all of you, and thank you for being here in this space, which is a space in physical space, I guess you could say, wherever we are together, and also in time, because I know there will be a number of people who will be listening to this recording later, so I welcome you all as well, you beings of the future. And of course, you're always, every meeting we ever have is recorded and archived on our website. So if you ever want to go back and just check something or listen, you're always free, of course, to do that. We have these recorded, I think, going all the way back to 2011, so the last 10 years. Time flies. I mean, it's amazing. What a wonderful adventure it has been so far, and only going to get better. So we'll see. The thing that we have to understand, I think, is to have as best we can as much clarity in our awareness, and to try to foster a sense of understanding for others too, wherever they are in their journey. So I wanted to talk about a few things today. Let's see. One of the things, I got a letter from one of us, a woman, she's actually in Europe, and I don't think she's probably on the call because it's the middle of the night. We only have, Gavi is here, I know, from England, the middle of the night here. Thank you for joining us. But anyway, she had a question that I think is really good to just kind of go over a little bit. It's always helpful, I think, to revisit some of the ideas that are not only in the World Peace Diet, but that we've talked about in the World Peace Diet trainings and so forth, and I've written about in my articles and so forth. And that is the basic question of how is it that intelligent, caring people, our friends and neighbors and so forth, don't hear our message and go vegan, right? I mean, that basic idea, like, why in the heck don't people change when they hear the message? And that particular question is sort of the $10,000 question, and I've written a lot about it. I think, a lot of people have written about this, but she kept asking it in a variety of different ways, and specifically if it's perhaps actual physical addictions that people have to foods, that it's like telling someone they should just stop smoking cigarettes or stop, something that's physically addictive, alcohol perhaps or heroin, and they just have a hard time doing it because it's physically addictive. Could it be that animal foods and junk foods, which very often go together, are physically addictive, and that's really the problem? People just don't have the capacity to break these physical addictions. They have all good intentions sometimes, but then suddenly these cravings for cheese or for eggs or for meat, something like that, overtake them. So, and then of course the idea is that so-called junk foods, and Alan Goldhammer here in Santa Rosa talks about SOS, and you're probably all aware of that, salt, oil, and sugar. That the food companies of the world are basically very skillful at mixing combinations of salt, oil, and sugar, which seem to be three things that we humans on some level, perhaps for survival reasons, tend to crave, because maybe there just wasn't very much of that around. If you go back 10,000, 20,000 years, oil and fat, that takes a lot of, it's difficult to get, right? So that was always something that was highly prized. Only the rich people could actually get fat in the old days, get enough to eat to get that kind of thing. And sugar, of course, again, was something that is quick energy. So the idea is that we get addicted, that our body is hardwired to want salt, oil, and sugar. These are healthy things that are somewhat hard to get, perhaps, in earlier times. And so now our foods are flooded with those, and that there may be an addictive quality to those. So I think there's definitely possibilities to that. And there's vegans who even talk about the fact that even as vegans, we can be addicted to salt and or oil and or sugar. So one of the things I think that's really important for us, if we want to be effective advocates and live our lives in a positive way, is to do the best we can to be conscious of these things and to not allow our body-mind, because I don't think it's really separate, to come under the sway of these kind of addictive substances, which can be a big job. It can be difficult because sugar addictions or addictions to, I think, fat also, or salt, can be pretty hard to break for a lot of people. One of the things I always find pretty interesting, you may or may not find it true in your life, but I found it to be pretty true over the years, is the macrobiotic understanding of yin and yang. And so if you have foods that are very yin, which we have a lot of in our society, foods and substances, and then you have foods that are very yang, which we have a lot of in our society. It's not just foods. I mean, it's foods, beverages, and I would say also perhaps ways of being, that we will get unbalanced. We'll become extremely yin, and then we'll crave extreme yang, and then we'll crave extreme yin. So what I mean by that is salt is extremely yang. That's the basic idea. It's contractive. And other things that are contractive are meat and cheese, which is very salty. And so our society is kind of awash in a lot of animal flesh, cheese, and salt, and anything that's kind of more aggressive in general tends to be kind of yang energy. It's from the Chinese point of view of yin and yang, the two basic energies. And so then our being, our body and our being will kind of crave something really yin, right? And so yin is sugar and oil. Fats in general usually are pretty yin. And also alcohol, tobacco, most of the drugs, the marijuana and all that different stuff tends to really be very yin. So we'll, very often we have wine, and then, we want meat, then we want to have some wine, or we want to drink, or we want to smoke, or whatever. So, or we want dessert afterwards. We had all this, salt, and we want something sweet. We have something sweet, now we want something salt, you know. So one of the things I know is, like, if I have a little bit out of balance, like in wanting to have more salt, make sure I'm not having too much sugar, or because that'll, if I reduce the sugar, then that'll reduce the craving for salt, because they go together. So the whole idea is to keep our lives kind of, like Jesus said, right, in the middle way, or Buddha also said that actually, but the idea is to just realize that vegetables and grains and beans and so forth, they're not either yin or yang. If you don't put a bunch of sugar or salt or oil into the mix, they kind of keep us, we don't tend to crave anything. And so that's one of the reasons that Madeline and I emphasize the importance of whole foods, a whole food, organic, plant-based diet, because I think the more we can eat whole foods and then just maybe add a little salt, you know, salt's not the end of the world, or maybe have a little sugar here and there, but to be pretty disciplined about it. And with time, I think what we find is that the discipline isn't that much of a discipline. It becomes something delicious. Our taste buds get more sensitive, and we really enjoy the nuances of flavor even in brown rice with some broccoli or whatever. Other people might think, oh, that's so bland, but with time it's like, oh my God, it's amazingly delicious. So we can kind of bliss out on things that most people would think are not even all that great at all. We tend to become jaded if we oversaturate our senses. So the whole idea is to kind of be aware of some of these principles. But her question underlying, to get back to her question, is because I think it's important for us to be aware of these things for us. But the general public, of course, from the time they're little kids, very often their senses are getting overwhelmed. And there's MSG, another thing, which is just kind of like throwing gasoline on the fire. It makes everything pop in sort of superhuman flavors that would never happen naturally. You add MSG into the mix. So people can get addicted to flavors. And so I talk about that in the World Peace Diet, that, you know, people, the three main things are social conditioning and indoctrination and taste. And, you know, the infant indoctrination is a big problem. I mean, that's, I think, the main thing. So my tendency to answer her question is, I think addiction, physical addiction, is a thing. Some of you are probably aware of the research showing that casein, for example, when we digest that, the main protein in milk creates casomorphines. Cows are divinely, beautifully formulated. I mean, their milk is to have morphine-like substances in the milk, so that when the baby drinks the milk, the baby gets sleepy and mama can have some time to herself without the baby always nipping at her. Utter. So the idea is there's naturally occurring morphine-like substances in dairy products. And this research is showing that casomorphines and morphine-like substances are also found, for some reason, not only in dairy, but even addictive qualities in animal flesh as well, not quite as strongly as dairy. That physical addiction could be part of it. That's probably one of the reasons that cheese is the heart, because there's so much casein is in cheese. It's a really, I think, physically addictive substance. And so going vegetarian very often tends to be easier than going vegan, perhaps for that reason. But there's, I think, even more perhaps powerful are just the addictions to our self-image, to the memories that we have of being loved by our mother and father and barbecues and the people around us, the social pressure. I mean, there's so many varying influences. So, and one of the things I think we're seeing today very clearly is the tremendous degree to which we humans are really not rational at all. We are basically, I would say, tribal, and it seems very easily influenced by what the people around us are doing. We tend to look around us for cues, and we want to more or less fit in. That's a very important thing. So I think that's probably one of the hardest things, is to just to think of eating different food. There's nothing more fundamental in breaking our ties with our loved ones and friends and family and with our whole sense of identity than changing our food. So even though it would be great to think that we humans are rational and that we actually want to do the right thing rationally, and also from an emotional point of view, that we're loving and compassionate and kind and caring for animals, for future generations, for slaughterhouse workers and all these beings that are harmed by eating animal foods, wildlife. I mean, it's pretty easy to see if we just lift the very edge of the flap on the tent there, and we can look inside the tent a little bit, and we go, oh my God, look at that. I mean, there's a total bloodbath going on in there, and it's just destroying not only animals, but the environment and oceans, rivers and future generations and our own health. I mean, all these things. So you would think that we would very quickly move away from such obviously destructive behavior, but we just keep going on. So I think the most important thing for us as vegans, as I keep saying, is to cultivate a sense of ourselves as healers. And instead of trying to shame or blame or criticize people into going vegan, or try to point out how wrong they are and how ridiculous it is what they're doing, because that tends, I think, to just drive it deeper, to beckon them out of, as Buddha said, out of the burning house. And that's really, I think, the thing. You know, if people are in a burning house and you go in and they're dancing and having a good time, they don't notice that it's burning. They don't realize that the food they're eating is destroying their health and destroying the planet. So if we can somehow beckon them out of that by showing how wonderful it is that, you know, how happy we are that we've been able to make the change. And as I've said before, I just want to reiterate it. I think the most powerful way that we can bring this message, or one of the most powerful ways, is what Gandhi, he used the word satyagraha, which is truth power, to speak our own truth, just tell our own story, because that's defusing them. They're not, we're not blaming them. We're just saying, gosh, you know, it's so great. I discovered I was just following orders all those years that were not in my best interest. I'm not doing it anymore, and it's great. And that basic idea, without in any way blaming people, and just being, then letting go and being willing to answer questions, but without coming off like I'm trying to change them. Because as soon as people feel like they're being pressured to change, the healthy thing to do is to resist. So I think that's a trap that we tend to fall into as individuals and as a movement. And the other thing I think I've noticed happening in our movement quite a bit, which is kind of somewhat bothering me lately, it's always been there somewhat, but I think it's even stronger now, is this idea that it's okay to hate humans, that humans are a cancer on the earth, that we are this horrible, destructive species, and the best thing would be to kill all the people, get rid of the people, and then we'd have harmony. And there's quite a few, I feel it, you know, just from my somewhat limited exposure to social media and to the whole conversation that's going on in the world, that more and more people are sort of enthusiastically sharing that idea that we got to get rid of people. There's too many people on the planet anyway, and we got to depopulate, and that humans are doing nothing but destroying everything. So, I mean, it's certainly, you know, we can argue that there's a lot of truth to the fact that we are doing that. I mean, we are, the way our institutions are set up and the way we're programmed to fit into a very violent, patriarchal, herding culture, we're slaughtering animals, and we're cutting down rainforests, and we're destroying the oceans, and we're polluting our nest. You know, there's no doubt about it. But I think this idea of hating humanity, wanting to depopulate the earth, is a very dark force, and it fails to see what one of the things I've been saying all along is that we, right now, the number of people that we have, we could easily feed everybody on a fraction of the land if we would go vegan. I mean, we understand that. It's about 10 or 15 to 1, according to the National Academy of Sciences. We could reduce the amount of land and water and petroleum massively. So we could have all these people that we have now, and if we organized ourselves well, we don't have to kill everybody off and have this feeling of us as cancer. The whole idea is just change our food, change the way we're eating, and change the way we look at ourselves and nature and animals. So that's the healing power. So I wanted to kind of put those ideas out here at the beginning, just to see if anybody has any comments or questions about those ideas, or any issues in your own life around some of these ideas of being an effective vegan advocate. Because I mean, quite honestly, I keep seeing this, and I've been writing some articles lately, some of you may have seen it, that we're now entering a stage where we humans, even though we've always been somewhat imprisoned and we've been under the illusion of having freedom, when in many ways we didn't have that much freedom, there's been a wealthy elite that's been controlling humanity really for a long time. And people have talked about the idea that when you put a frog in the water, if it's hot water, the frog will jump out right away. But if you put it in cold water and then gradually turn up the heat, the frog doesn't notice it. And then when it gets hot, the frog doesn't jump out. And I was on a very interesting panel yesterday, which I can share with you if you want to know more about it. It was called Vaccines, Vivisection, and Veganism, right? The three Vs, vaccines, vivisection, and veganism. And one of the women on the who was on the panel with me, it was neat. There was somebody from England, Germany, Spain, me in California, and Australia. So it was like all together at 7 in the morning and 8 at night or whatever. But she said, you know, they've always been just gradually turning up the heat. until now. You know, now in 2020, they just suddenly turned the heat up like really fast. And so all the frogs should now jump out. And I had the feeling, I said, well, I think it's, in a way, it's almost like it's too late. The frogs aren't jumping out here. But the underlying idea is that we have, you know, the situation where we are becoming the livestock. That's the point I've been trying to make here, that we've always been somewhat seen as livestock. Those of us who are not in the 0.1% of the human population. And we've been allowed to vote and allowed to do certain things. But basically, things have been pretty controlled. The narratives have been controlled. The media has been controlled. But the tempo of that has been increasing, it seems to me, in the years since I've been on the planet. And I think looking back to the 1800s, 1900s, and so forth. And it seems like that tempo is increasing even more quickly now, so that it's becoming actually more obvious that we are being controlled, and our freedom is more and more illusory. So we are becoming, I think, more obviously the livestock, that the way that humans are taught to look at cows and sheep and goats and so forth, and pigs and chickens, where there's a wealthy elite class that looks at humanity in the same way, and it's time to cull the herd, and we got to get rid of people, or we've got to not let them do whatever it is they want to do. So that's why I think it's so critical that we go vegan, because the boomerang effect is really happening. As we sow, so shall we reap. If we're going to insist on imprisoning and abusing and exploiting billions of animals, how can we expect to think that that's not going to happen to us? So to be skillful in spreading the vegan message is more important than ever. So that's why I want to bring this up about, you know, why is it that it's so hard for people to change? Is it the addiction? Physical food addiction? Is it their addiction to their images? Is it their fear of change? You know, there's also, I think, maybe I'll just say one more thing. I saw this fascinating video day before yesterday. It was part of a summit. And it was a video put on, created by this guy who wanted to show how we are subliminally programmed. And I should just show it, but it's too long. But anyway, the idea was he showed this guy who came onto one of these events where they have really talented people, you know, great singers and jugglers and whatever. And his thing was that he could predict whatever anybody was going to do. And so when he came on the stage, there was a short video. It's about a 2-minute video where he just kind of walked through this little village, and he talked a little bit about how his background, how he'd been a bartender, and how he got interested in what makes people tick and what motivates people and why they do what they do and why they think what they think and why they believe what they believe and what motivates people. And he said, I figured it out. He said, I realize, you know, it's not people don't do anything by their conscious mind. It's all by the subconscious. They're driven by their subconscious mind. So he kind of said that as he walked through. And then he was there, and there was all these thousands of people, you know, in the audience, and there was you know, a few celebrities that, you know, that are sort of asking questions. So he said, okay, so I want you to, I'm just going to set my watch here for a certain time, and I'd like you to go ahead and just close your eyes for a minute and just tell me what time I set my watch for. And the guy, and then write it down. So the guy did it, and he wrote it down. And then he said, and then one more thing. He said, I'm going to ask you to just close your eyes and just for a moment, just see what image pops into your mind. And then go ahead and then just make a little picture of that on a piece of paper. Don't show anybody. So the guy made a little picture on a piece of paper and wrote it down. And then, so then he said, okay, now I'm going to go ahead and tell you what time I think you wrote down. And the guy's like, yeah, right, how are you going to know? And he said, I think you wrote down 4:00. And the guy showed up his paper that he'd written down, and it was 4:00. He was like, how do you know that? And then he said, and now let's do the image. I think what you probably drew was an image of the sun. and can you hold up your image? And the guy held up an image of a circle with all these rays coming up. It was the sun. It was an obvious picture of the sun. And then he had asked everybody in the audience to do the same thing. So everybody in the audience held up their paper, and there's like 1,000 people, and they all had an image of the sun, and they all had 4 o'clock. And, you know, and so he said, if you go back over the little video beforehand, it was completely invisible, but there were these little round, sort of like sun-like images here and there, and there was one place where it was 4 o'clock. They were things you would never, ever remember consciously. But that was what people pick up on. What he was pointing out is that we pick up on cues, that advertisers have been doing this for decades. They are always planting in the ads subconscious cues that people, because you know, they're paying millions of dollars for advertising, and we go around thinking that advertising doesn't work. You know, he said it really works. It get people act on what's on their subconscious. So this is another thing I think we have to be aware of on some level. I mean, I'm not sure where to take it exactly, but as vegans, there are subconscious forces. People think that they're conscious and just doing what they consciously choose to eat and say and do, but very often they're driven by images, and the media is incredibly skilled after 100 years at least of studying this and how to effectively program human beings to do what they want them to do through media images and sound bites and so forth. These things run in our subconscious and propel us along in more in ways that we don't think so. So there was a number of these kind of videos that I watched. There was other ones too. It's too complicated to go into, but I remember way back in the 1980s when I was teaching college courses in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there was a book called Subliminal Seduction, and I actually made that one of the textbooks for one of my courses on American culture, because this is something I think that we have to be aware of, perhaps, in some way, is that people have subliminal messages that are very powerful on many levels, and I think the more, you know, I don't like the idea of trying to subliminally indoctrinate people. I'd rather not do that. I think it's slimy and it's, but it's being used a lot. So I think it's important for us, to guard our, what we used to say on the farm in Tennessee in the hippie communes, guard your gourd, you know, be aware of your thoughts and where they come from. That's why meditation is so important, I think. Because we can actually get a little bit more clarity between and discriminate between the thoughts that are actually mine and what we're, and ones that are just sort of coming in from the outer world that may be planted by the media, and to be able to free ourselves from that, because otherwise we're going to be just pushed along on the flood of imagery that is being generated by the media. One of the things I'm so happy about, and you've heard me probably say it, is that I haven't been to a doctor in almost 50 years, basically, except for a little eye thing I had. But otherwise, I've never gone to a doctor. I've never been to a drugstore for anything, for any drug of any kind, since I was 18 years old. So that's exactly 50 years ago. I remember I remember that way back when I was in college. I was a freshman in college, and I got a boil on my lip, and I had to get an antibiotic for my little boil. That was the last time. So 50 years ago, and whenever it was, 1971. But I think, for 50 years, about 48 years, I've never had a television, and I'm so grateful for that. I just absolutely don't do it. And, I think, and in fact, if it's playing somewhere, like in an airport or somewhere, it's such a thing. I just try to avoid even hearing what they're saying, because I feel this sense of the sanctity of the human mind and the sanctity of our own consciousness, and there's such a battle for that. There's the idea that if we can take over people's minds, we've got them. You know, they'll do whatever we want them to do. And so I think as vegans, we have done a great job if we've been able to get out of the subconscious and conscious programming to see animals as mere objects, and to continue that momentum in our lives, to just really stand porter at the gate of our mind and not allow in media images that are toxic or these ideas that are based on fear and disempowering us, that are making objects of each other. It's a tremendous divide and conquer set of images pervading the media right now. So to be effective as vegans and to keep our movement healthy, I think it really comes back to us as individuals being aware of all these different levels happening and connecting in a meditative way with our true nature, taking time to connect with the beauty of nature, go outside and be in the natural world. There's no programming going on in the natural world other than healthy programming. I mean, jumping into the water, looking at trees, connecting with birds. I mean, you know, these are the kinds of things that align us with our wisdom. And it's like putting armor on, I think, in many ways, against the human world that is fake. I mean, it's so fake. There's so much falsity and fear and deception going on, massive amounts of deception right now. And the deception, I think, gets its roots in the basic deception of meat and dairy and eggs, seeing these products as food. That's the main deception. Once you got people eating animal foods and believing that we need to slaughter animals, we need to horribly sexually abuse them and steal their babies and do all this and then eat that stuff. Once you get people doing that, then they're all pretty much 90% of the way down the path of enslavement. And if we don't remove that, I don't think there's any hope really for freeing humanity, because we're enslaving billions of animals. How can we expect to be free? How can we expect to be worthy of being free if we're enslaving animals completely unnecessarily? All right, so those are the... How am I doing? Yeah, okay, I used up maybe a little too much time. But thank you, everyone, for listening to some of those ideas. Does anyone have any questions or comments about anything, or bring up anything for anybody? Because I'm happy to respond. Okay, I'll say Julie is waving. Go ahead, Julie. You can press *6, I think, to unmute there. And,
is it working?
Yay, yes, I can hear you. Yeah.
I always have quite a lot to say about hypnosis as a 30-year veteran of professional hypnosis training and as a author of 12 hypnosis books and someone who's actually taught medical hypnosis at Massachusetts General Hospital for Grand Rounds. So this is like my cup of vegan tea, so to speak. First of all, I just want to address caseomorphine, because that's in all milk. It's not just in cow milk. It's in all milk, that all mammal milk, so
sheep
that
and
we
goats.
Become addicted
right.
to
right.
it. And
yeah.
yes, there is an addictive property to many, many things that we eat, because largely because we've been programmed to get addicted to things or to believe we're addicted to things. I know I've trained or helped thousands of people to stop smoking who are ready to do it. And they had no tension, no stress, no physical withdrawal of any kind whatsoever, no weight gain, because I got them to believe it wasn't necessary. But we've been programmed to believe we need meat, we need eggs, we need all the stuff that we don't need that is harmful to us. We've been programmed so poorly in so many ways pertaining to our diet that really, yes, well, I agree 100,000% that it would be slimy to use subliminal hypnosis to do our advocacy work. But what we need to do and what we are doing, each of us in our own way, is we are not doing hypnosis. We are doing de-hypnosis, because everyone is walking around in the world, or to a large degree, in a very bad trance, a trance that was inflicted upon us since before we were born. It was inflicted upon our parents before they were born. It's a bad trance, and we have to get people to wake up from the trance when we have the opportunity, when we have the moment, when we have the right opening. And I pray for that all the time. I pray for a way to reach people, for the right timing. Like, we've had some really excitement this week because we're at camp in Maine, at our spiritualist camp, and we found out that our pastor is now vegetarian. That is like so amazing to me, because I had so much trouble with him eating meat in front of our congregation. And he went somewhere during the pandemic, he switched. So apparently the little messages that we've dropped, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's us just refusing to carry food into a food line because it's got an animal product, and saying, I'm sorry, I'm not going to carry that because it's a dead animal. You know, people aren't expecting us to say that. So when you say it and you refuse to touch something that's got an animal product in it, they start to realize, oh, my God, she thinks that's dirty. You know, is it dirty? You know, so little ways that you could just influence people without, like, trying to throw them in a trance and, you know, tie them up and, you know, take all the food out of their fridge and start over. Little tiny ways where they just kind of are open at that moment. At that moment where their subconscious is maybe just thinking of something else and you just say something, just the right thing at the right time. So Jason McCush, our beloved pastor, is now a vegetarian. And that warms my heart. And then if that wasn't good enough, and that was almost good enough because now we've got to get to a vegan, but very, very good news. Another pastor in our church, this woman, Joanne, I just noticed that she posted a picture of some lasagna that she made that was all vegan. Every bit of it was vegan, and it was also free of, what's this, gluten, which, you know, I didn't, like, post, gee, once you're a vegan, you probably would be able to tolerate gluten. I left that out. I just said, I am so proud of you, Joanne. So that's two pastors. So anyway, it's dehypnosis. That's what we need to do. We're all hypnotized in the wrong ways at the wrong time, whether it's the pharmacies, whether it's our doctors, whether it's the teachers telling us the food pyramid. We need to, like, get people to snap out of it and see the difference and, you know, suddenly drop our messages. It's just the right way, with always with love. That's right. The part I'm working on, because sometimes I just want to choke people. Fred's got a comment.
Wow. Sorry, thank you, Julie. That's very, very well said. I mean, I really appreciate you, all you just contributed, especially from your background as a hypnotherapist. So you've been able to help people get off of smoking, like you were saying, and work with people in medical situations. And what you said about people being hypnotized from the womb, I mean, that's a stretch, I think, for most people to imagine that. But I would say, but I can see what you mean. I mean, it's when you have even the sperm and egg come together and the people are hypnotized, it's gonna have that field on some level. If people are, they've been eating animal foods and everything, there's a really, besides the World Peace Diet, one of my other favorite books, Anastasia. There's a series of books called, written by Vladimir Magray. Anastasia is the first book. This Russian woman who's a sage living in the tundra in the Siberia. It's actually 10 books. It's a whole series. But those books, a few of those books go into that idea quite deeply of how our consciousness is passed into our children and even our grandchildren, even our great grandchildren. So, it's very, very eye opening, really, to read some of what these in Russia, they've been really researching these things. They're not quite as bound by materialism as it seems like we are in the United States or in Western Europe. They have more of an openness to the energy of these things and do research in that area. So thank you, Julie. That was very illuminating.
Fred's also got something to say. He's a hidden sister.
Yes, Fred. Yes, go ahead, Fred. Can you unmute, please?
Thank you.
Yeah, the things you said about the way the message is somehow not being heard, I think the message should be stronger, and I think it should hit people where they will do something about what you say, because, I can still be an ass. You know, a lot of men, I think, feel that they're going to be soft if they go that way, or that's what people will expect of them. The real thing is, in order to get this worldwide, we're going to have to reach some people who are not mentally wired the way we are. I mean, you're getting people that have a softer edge very much more easily than these people will hear you. And I don't know how shocking the message should be, but it's got to be something that will really get people talking about it with each other. It's got to be something that hits them so hard that, did you hear about this? You know, that it will, people will just naturally do it. I mean, myself, I had melanoma, and I read Colin Campbell's book 11 years ago, and as soon as I read what he said about animal protein promotes the growth of cancer cells in your body and plant protein doesn't, boom, I was sold. You know, that was it. And that kind of message should be more, and I haven't had any since.
That's great.
I still get basal cells and things like that and very small cancers, but I don't have anything that is life-threatening anymore.
Right.
And people seem like they should want to know about that.
Thank you. Yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that? I mean, I think it's a good point. You know, it's like, how hard should we be hitting people with these messages? And I think, you know, I myself, I'll just say briefly, I've always been an advocate of, undercover footage of what happens on factory farms. I mean, I think, that helped me a lot to really, once I really saw this stuff. And I noticed that in my class. I remember teaching a class on ethics way back in about 1985 or something. And I used Peter Singer's Animal Liberation. It had just come out. And so we were talking about animal rights in the class. And, oh, man, everybody was like, oh, you know, why do you think animals should have rights? I mean, it's not that bad. And, I wasn't getting too far. And then I just thought, all right, I'm going to show a video. And it was in the early days of videos, but Tom Regan had made a video, We Are All Noah. It's a great video, actually. And it's not very graphic, but it's got enough. I mean, enough. You show some factory farm slaughterhouse footage a little bit and what these animals endure. And the students were, it completely changed the conversation. I mean, it was like, Why didn't you tell us? We didn't know it was like that. It was so terrible. Oh, my God, no, we shouldn't let that happen. That's terrible. That should not happen. You know, people suddenly completely changed around when they actually saw that. And so I think I've just seen it happen a lot. When I talk to people, you know, they very often say it was watching Earthlings or whatever. And I know Judy's up with us on the call. She and Michael used to go out on the corner. We did it with them a few times. In Lawrence, Kansas, with their car battery and their little TV, and show Earthlings to people walking down the sidewalk, you know, with just, you know, because if you hand out literature, they go, oh, I don't care. But you show that, and they're like, whoa, you know. That, and then what you're talking about, Fred, is the other aspect, which is the tremendous, like healing from these horrible, like heart disease and cancer and diabetes. I mean, people care. They want to, you know, that opens a doorway too. So of course the mainstream media, which is owned by Big Pharma, does everything it can to keep all of this stuff away from people. The last thing they want, the greatest enemy we have is Big Pharma in terms of, all the industries that are opposed to veganism. It's by far Big Pharma, I think, is the most. And they control the media the most too, and they have the most money. So it's hard to get these images, however we can, I think it's helpful. Somebody else had their hand up, I think. Okay, Kenny, yeah, go ahead.
Hello, this is Lily. I don't know if it was I.
Oh, okay, Lily, yeah, go ahead, and then Kenny, okay.
Okay, well, you know, just my message is very simple. I've read the World Peace Diet 8 times, but within the first 3 chapters of the World Peace Diet, I became vegan. My husband and I were both struck vegan at the same time because he was reading aloud to me in the kitchen while I was preparing dinner, and I turned to him and I said, "We're vegan, aren't we?" And the thought had not really occurred to me until the first 3 chapters. It had not occurred to me to become a vegan. And that was all, going on 15 years ago. I'm in my 15th year of being vegan because of the World Peace Diet. All I can say is everything that you want to address is in that book, if you but read it. And read it again and read it again and read it again, because we make a study out of it, and I actually did for almost 5 years on a,
yes.
on a conference call. So I'm a person of the book. Winston Churchill said, find one book that you can, you know, that you can live by, read that book, and then live by that book. And that World Peace Diet is my book. And everything people talk, oh, listen to this, listen to that. Oh, did you know about this? It's all in the World Peace Diet. The research was done by a genius. And I can't say enough about just, if you've read it once, it's not enough. If, you know, and you have the audio with the wonderful author reading it in his own voice. It is a impassioned plea to humanity is what it is, with all of the scientific background, including the health negativity, the negative aspects of being a person who eats an omnivorous diet. It has everything in it. So all I can say is I'm not going to say any more. Read that book. If you're on this call and you know the book, you don't know it. I'm telling you, I just picked it up again for the ninth time. I still don't know the book. It's such a strong message. It will get people vegan. It certainly got us vegan. We became vegan within the first 3 chapters. Thank you, Will Tuttle. I so appreciate being a vegan. It's the best thing I've ever done with my life. And I'll hang up now. I'm going to just mute.
Thank you so much, Lily. Okay. Well, you know, I really appreciate that. And I feel, obviously, I put a lot of years into creating the World Peace Diet as a vehicle for bringing every aspect of the message to hit people gently and also hit them pretty hard and give the whole story. So, I think that's, it is very helpful too. I've met people that listen to it, and a woman I met, she said she listened to it over 30 times. You know, she's listened to it.
Will, by the way, it'll make you a better activist. That's my, I'm an activist. I'm a vegan activist. And it makes you a better activist because you get it imprinted and you can just bring it right up. So, yeah, it's fantastic. And yes, I'm not even counting the times I've listened to it. I'm talking about reading the word, you know, on the page.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thanks so much for that. Important message. And go ahead, Kenny. Do you want to talk, Kenny? It looks like you're still muted. So,
is this good now?
Okay. Wait. Yeah. You're good.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah. I got to first express my gratitude for you, Will Tuttle, and of course for your book. I agree with everything people have said. And I, with my good mutual friend, super duper vegan Virgo Ray Cooper, used to give him all your Will Tuttle CDs when I've given out 40 or 50 of them. And that's just something I've also given out thousands of pamphlets from, and I know that they're effective, from Vegan Outreach, Mercy for Animals, In Defense of Animals, PETA, Farm Sanctuary. But I just want to not be too long, but I knew people who were vegetarians. I had a video business for 23 years in Santa Rosa. And it wasn't until Dr. Ed Bowman, who I think you might know, started Bowman College, came to my office and gave me the Diet for New America PBS documentary. I never heard of John Robbins. And I watched it, and I watched it, and that just, like, opened the door. Like, I never saw a slaughterhouse before. And then I made copies of that and started giving that to people. And then it took me a few years to start, you know, going to vegetarian conferences. And then reading the book, and I know when I picked up the book, it was a process, in other words. It was 9 years later that I got, and I'm reading Diet for New America. I bought it for my son, who didn't, you know, really read it. I opened it, and I read the chapter on chickens, and that was the main animals I'd been eating. And I said, I'm never eating chickens again. But then I continued. I met Gabriel Cousins. I went to vegetarian conferences. I would have never met you without having gone through this process, because there are a lot of people out there who are vegans and they don't speak out. for, you know, they're not activists. So I know just one last thing is that this is a real quick story. Besides, you know, giving out those videos or giving out your CDs, just, you know, sometimes it's a pamphlet from Vegan Outreach that someone opens and goes, oh my God, because it kind of, it's a good summary. But just one quick story is I had this girlfriend a few years ago, 5 years ago, who became vegan after knowing me. She listened to your World Peace Diet and saw, you know, learned stuff. And then her daughter was screaming at her and saying, you know, what's wrong with this? She said, we're now no milk, no dairy, no meat in our house. And the daughter's yelling at her and screaming. And I said, listen, this is what you do. To watch Sir Paul McCartney's video, slaughterhouses had glass walls. Everyone would be a vegetarian, which has been adopted by PETA. It has a fair amount of violence, but it's Paul McCartney, the Beatles. So they both watched it and they kept hiding their eyes. Her daughter went vegan like that because she loved animals. Again, it could be, you know, I mean, your book is certainly, I put it at the top of the list of all the books, but I think sometimes you have to, you know, a pamphlet, you know, I know I've influenced at least 20 people to become vegetarian and vegan, at least through various methods. And I know that a good thing, I'm not egotistical, but that I've saved thousands of lives because I'm aware of this horror that you talk about. And it's like so horrible that, you know, I got so angry and so sad because I know what goes on, but I try to meditate, focus on, you know, one step at a time. I can change one person's, and I just like tell, you know, try to connect with people on their heart level. And once I do, then they might be open to hearing a video or reading your book. Anyway, just go ahead and share that.
Okay. All right, Kenny. Yeah. Good. Good point. Thanks. Let's see. We have just a note from Mac, the simple truth about animal protein promoting the growth of cancer cells. I mean, this is from Fred, actually. In your body is what will move people to explore that truth. People can tune out the horrible things done to animals, but they are very afraid of cancer. Yeah, that's, I know a lot of people, especially, perhaps older, middle-aged and older people, the health, argument, can be very helpful. Let's see, there was, someone, Elvin asked about, he had a question about, sweeteners, about artificial sweeteners. That's a really good question, actually, because a lot of people think, oh yeah, sugar's bad, but I don't eat sugar, I eat artificial sweetener. But if you look at, I'm not a super duper, expert on artificial sweeteners. I think, some of them I know are very, very, very bad. So, like aspartame is in a lot of this stuff. Splenda, there's these very, very toxic chemicals that are used as artificial sweeteners in Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi and those kinds of commercial that they metabolize to formaldehyde and really cause a lot of bad stuff in your body. I think there are other sweeteners with less calories that are alcohol based, xylitol maybe, some of those kind of things that end in OL, are better, I think. What we do mainly is we have a garden and we grow stevia, this little bush, and Madeline makes tea with peppermint leaves or other leaves, herbs, and then she puts stevia in. We can't seem to grow enough of it to keep up with it, but when we get stevia, it's really amazing. You put a few of those little leaves, stevia leaves, in, and it's really delicious. I mean, it adds that sweet flavor, and it's just a leaf. So I think probably if you have some kind of a stevia extract that's not too much processed would be another option. And maybe also, like when we, like we have land in Ecuador, I'll just say this, you know, we, in Ecuador, where they, like in the little village where they grow the sugar cane, we would go, and for 25 cents, we'd go to every weekend at this bridge, this guy would have one of those cranks you turn. And we also, when we were in India, we would do it, we would go too. And they had these sugar cane, stalks, and they just, crank this thing, and it kind of crushes the sugarcane through these rollers, and this brownish green liquid comes out. And you know, for 25 cents, you could have a drink and drink it, a cup of it. And my feeling is that that's pretty healthy, really. I mean, it's full of minerals. It's organic. It's just the juice from a grass, basically. And then what they would do in Ecuador was they would do that. They would get the juice, and they'd spread it on these plastic sheets. And in the sun, it would evaporate the water, and then they'd have this stuff. I think it was called paella or something like that. And they would sell that in blocks in the farmers markets on the weekend. And so that's a little more processed, a little more intense, but it's still not nearly as sweet as anything you'd buy, you know, as sugar in the store or even brown sugar. It's probably the healthiest if you're going to, it's just dehydrated cane juice, basically. So I think in moderation, you know, maybe that's not too bad. Although I know when we were at Hippocrates Health Institute, Brian Clement basically gave a whole lecture saying, like when we're here, we're trying to get rid of cancer and so forth. There's no sugar. I mean, no fruit, no anything. They're like really strict against sugar there. So it's good to be aware that it, you know, from his point of view and working with thousands of people over 30 years to get rid of cancer and other diseases, they don't serve sugar there at all. I mean, it's even a certain berries on 2 days a week, you can have some berries. But no, but he doesn't do sweet fruits there for people. So he would say that sugar is very addictive, and it's good to minimize it if you in the long run. Of course, he's dealing with very sick people. We have a garden here. We have 65 fruit trees. I mean, I've been eating these most delicious nectarines lately. They're very sweet, and they're delicious. And now we have grapes coming, and we have figs coming, and they're all, like, sweet and delicious. But we grow them ourselves, and And we asked, Madeline said, it's okay because we asked the chef at Hippocrates. We didn't ask Brian. We asked the chef. And the chef said, well, if it's from your own garden, yeah, I'm sure it's fine. You know? so we get our sugar that way from the stuff we grow ourselves. But it's good, I think, to kind of look carefully at the ingredients and the artificial sweeteners and do some research on those before you eat them, I think. All right, anyone else have anything? Let's see how we're doing on time here. Yeah, we have another few minutes, actually. We usually like to end by in about 5 minutes. So anyone else have any comment or question? Yeah, go ahead.
Judy.
Yes, Judy. Hi. Yes, hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about what you said early on about people hating people and wanting the human race to end. And I've noticed a lot of comments on Facebook lately, especially since the whole COVID thing and so much division and all that. It's maybe a little bit related to that, but it's also related to the cruelty to animals that continues on and the horrors perpetrated against the earth and all that. So what I've been doing when I notice that is I make a comment in there that we cannot solve these problems unless we become love ourselves. And as long as we're hating people, whoever they are, other vegans or slaughterhouse workers, whoever they are that they're targeting at the moment in their comment, it doesn't do the world any good. We have got to send love to those people and embrace them and fill the world with love energy, because if we hate, we're putting hate energy out, and we're just going to continue the boomerang effect that you're talking about. Against ourselves, against the world, against everything. And so I don't know if it's doing any good, but I'm trying to get that point across whenever I can, because you definitely see that a lot these days.
On vegan places, you mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but other places too. Yeah, environmentalists and, you know, others. So I'm glad you brought that up. So thanks.
All right. You're welcome. So could you say something quickly, Judy, maybe also, or maybe I can say it and you can chime in, just to let everybody know, it just occurred to me that this conference that we talked about a couple of months ago when Reverend Carol Saunders was our guest here on the third Thursday, it's being held in just outside Kansas City at Unity Village, October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, I believe those are the dates. It's
right.
On, right? It's on. I mean, this is, we were kind of wondering if it was going to be on or not, but it's on at this point.
Right.
But the problem is, I guess, as I understand it, is there's still a little short of registrations. So if you have any inkling at all to join us, this will be kind of a wonderful, I think, opportunity to really go deeper into spirituality and veganism and the whole message of the World Peace Diet. I'll be speaking. Madeline and I will be there. They have wonderful pianos in Myrtle Fillmore Hall and all these places I've played over the years. And they have a great vegan chef in the kitchen making vegan food. And, you know, Unity was really a beacon of veganism in the first 30 or 40 years. A lot of people were vegetarian and vegan. It was known for that. And then it went on, the whole message went down. And now most ministers and most people don't even know that the founders were promoting veganism before the word vegan was even invented, actually. So, and really for the motivation of compassion for animals was their underlying motivation. So this is the first time ever that there's been a vegan conference at Unity Village. Originally it was Unity Farm. They had orchards, they sold produce, and it still is a wildlife sanctuary. But we really need, to bring this vegan message into the world religions, and this is one place we can do it. So if you have any questions, please check it out. I'll give the link. Do you remember what the website is, Judy, for the...
I'm putting it on there. I misspelled it the first time. I'm doing it again now.
Oh, all right. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, the spiritualforum.org, is that right?
Right, but you have to put... okay, there's the correct one. You have to put the and spiritual together. And
spiritualforum.org.
Thespiritualforum.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I'll keep that in mind. It'll be great to see you if there's any possibility of that.
Please share it if you know people who might come, especially people from the Kansas City area, or Kansas, Missouri.
Right.
So please share it if you know people who might be interested, and please come yourself.
Yeah. Great. Thanks so much, Judy. And Susan, did you have your hand up before? It seemed like you did. Yeah.
Well, Bill, I wonder what you could say to help me. You know, it's a little bit about what you were saying about the subliminal stuff. The person I lived with, so there's these ads, this pharmacy ad on TV, which you may not want to hear about, but this is one thing that's driving me crazy. It's this ad, like, for psoriasis, and it keeps going, nothing is everything, nothing is everything. And I realized today, okay, they're saying if you're done with your psoriasis, then the world is wonderful. But so that line is killing me, nothing is everything. And then there's this ad about New York City, like public service ad, saying, Nothing can stop New Yorkers. I mean, this is after they let themselves be locked down and closed down and shut up, and now they're saying nothing can stop New Yorkers. And so all this stuff is really, you know, eating at me.
Right. Well, thank you, Susan. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's sort of the twist on these things. Nothing can stop New Yorkers. Nothing definitely stop New Yorkers. Nothing stopped them in their tracks. Yeah, right. So they keep affirming this, or nothing is everything. Kind of a little bit like Klaus Schwab's thing of, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? That basic idea. But I think it's good to, you know, just to, you know, be aware of the, what Julie was telling us before about the subliminal programming that's going on, and to do the best we can to not only succumb to it, but to point it out to people so they can see it. That takes the power away, and also not comply with the kinds of things that are taking our freedom away, and to do the best we can to be a force for liberation, questioning the whole thing. We're pretty much at the end of our time. I wanted to maybe I'll just say a couple of words at the end here about the panel yesterday that I was on. It's not going to be put up probably for a few more days, but when it is, I'll let you know. Or I'll have it in the, and by the way, please do look at the resources for the month, because I'll put it in the resources for next month. But the, the resources, it's a lot. I mean, it sort of comes, it probably takes you a whole month to go, then there's another month. There's many different articles and videos about things that are happening. But in the July resources, I was going to mention this actually. There's a few things I wanted to get to, but which I didn't. But the there's quite a few talks, videos of me giving lectures on various things. What is the philosophy of veganism? This is from the Real Truth About Health conference. It's a really good one. It's from from 2016, I believe, but it's amazing. Predicting what we're seeing happening around us right now. We also have some gardening videos up. We have some Madeline's Intuitive Kitchen, making golden milk from scratch. Quite a few on dairy. You know, some of my lectures. I did an interview with Marlene Narrow. So there's a lot of those things are up. Please, if you're interested, have a look at those. Sometimes they're a whole different side of me comes through. The one we did the other day, yesterday, was a couple of experts in alternative medicine who have written books. This one woman in England has written a book called What Really Makes You Ill, and she was talking about the vaccines and how historically it's been a lot of suffering of animals. I mean, historically, they've always had animal products in them. There's cell lines of animals, and to make like the flu vaccine, you have to get all these chicken embryos, and every single one has chicken embryo in it, and or monkey or cow or pig or dog or horse or some animal or human fetal lines. They're living fetuses that have to be killed to do that. So and then they're all tested on animals. So the idea is there's quite a controversy right now about the vaccines. The vaccines are so the big news right now in the world. But the fact is that they're always tested on animals. These new ones apparently don't necessarily have the traditional animal cells in them that all other vaccines have, because it's not a vaccine like a traditional vaccine where you put a disease cells from animals into the mix, and then you add squalene and other adjuvants, which cause an inflammation response, because otherwise antibodies won't be generated, so it won't work at all. But of course, what these people are saying is they never work anyway, actually. But they do cause a lot of suffering to people, and also to animals who have to be killed for that. But the idea was that these new ones, the COVID ones, don't have animal tissues in them. They have spike proteins, they may have graphene oxide and other toxins, but they are nevertheless all tested on animals. So animal testing is going on, and that means they inject it into animals and then they kill the animals. So from my point of view, as a vegan, I don't take vaccines. I don't take medications. I try not to do it. I haven't done it. I haven't done it so far. And I think it's a little bit, one of the women from Australia, she was saying how she feels that there's so much hatred towards vegans who don't vaccinate because for ethical reasons by other vegans. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing, because why do we suddenly make excuses, you know. We don't make excuses for a little bit of cheese or a little bit of leather, you know, we try not to do it, right? So, but anyway, everybody, makes their own choice, and I'm not judging anyone, but I think it's a thing happening right now that is very divisive, so if you're interested, this will be coming out in a few days, and I'll try to send it out to everybody on the list since I've talked about it here, and you can learn a little bit more. It might be helpful. Information is, if it's based on truth, I think is really important in these times because there's such a massive amount of deception going on. And like I say, my experience is that the pharmaceutical industry makes so many billions of dollars from drugs on animals and sick people that they've been able to completely capture, it's called regulatory capture. They've been able to capture the FDA, the USDA, the CDC, WHO, and they've been able to capture the mainstream media. So for us to really understand what's happening, we have to use our intuition and question the official narratives and support each other in that too. So, all right. So I want to just thank all of you. I really went over it. So it's time to end here, but much love to all of you. Thanks again for joining us. We have the first Thursday coming up in August. We'll have our meditative gathering for 1 hour, and I'll play one short piece. Thank all of you for contributing to our time together. I'm sorry if I wasn't able to get to questions that you may have had, or if I was unskillful in my speech in any way. We do the best we can here, and I want to thank all of you for all of your efforts. And maybe we can just close with our prayer for compassion together. It goes: compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And maybe I'll just do one of these things I hardly ever do. I will just, here we go, let's see. How do I do it? Anyway, you can unmute if you'd like, and we can say it together, even though it's not at the same time. So together, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. One last time. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Woohoo! Much love to you all. Go forth and multiply.
Thank you, Will.
Appreciate you.
Thank you for a great program.
Thanks so much. Much love.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great show, Will. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.